This special episode is brought to you in partnership with Olay's Collagen Peptide Max Menopause Skincare Collection. Now, normally when I see you first thing in the morning, Lorraine, I like to ask you what you had for breakfast, don't I? But today I have a different question for you.
Yes, you are obsessed with my breakfast. Well, this morning it was eggs, eggs and eggs because I can't do that funny fruit compote stuff you speak
my
of
compote,
all the time.
No.
What do you want to ask me this morning, my little friend?
What I want to know today is how did you feel when you looked in the mirror this morning? Because I've been reading some rather sorry stats about this.
Oh, well, I guess I'm always a little bit curious and sometimes a little bit shocked by what I see in the mirror, because I didn't really expect to get old, because in my head, or get older, in my head I'm still 18, obviously, and I think, why is that 18-year-old girl with all the plump collagen not looking back at me? I mean, I'm not disappointed, ever, but I could have been a bit more prepared for it, possibly, if I'd known it was coming. It's just an ongoing story, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. It's funny, isn't it? Because we really talk about midlife being the don't give a stuff years, or insert a swear word beginning with F if you prefer. But confidence about how we look is still a big issue for many women at this life stage, according to a survey by Olay. And they found that a third of women, 37%, who've hit menopause, their menopause years, struggle with their reflection in the mirror. And nearly a quarter are feeling stressed and or depressed by the changes happening to their skin. I mean, that's a little bit worrying and alarming.
Yeah, it's always worrying when women take it upon themselves to feel sad about themselves, isn't it? There's a lot we don't know. And when we don't know, we get very fearful and upset about it. And, you know, culture around us is telling us we might want to look one way and we look in the mirror and we look the other way. I mean, it's important not to get depressed or disappointed, but it can be a bit annoying, can't it? So I can understand the statistics.
It can be. Yeah, because as you say, you can sort of wake up one day and look in the mirror and think, you know, you buy a magnifying mirror or you do what I did and put your glasses on and you're like, oh, hang on a second.
What's going on here?
What's that sprouting out of my chin? I think you're right. Knowledge is power in this situation, and knowing that there are things that you can do about it doesn't have to be a downward spiral.
Yeah, I think what helped me was understanding exactly what was happening with my skin during perimenopause and menopause. You know, and as with pretty much everything else at this stage of life, the drop in the estrogen hormone and the imbalance with testosterone is what's causing all of this, because these two hormones play a key role in our skin function. Estrogen stimulates the formation of skin smoothing collagen, which we like, and the oils that help our skin retain moisture. So it's no surprise that when the estrogen drops or fluctuates, it can lead to dry, itchy and sensitized skin all over the face and body for some women. And many may also end up suffering from menopausal acne, which may be caused by other factors too, but it may be caused by the hormones. We are not medical experts, and we do always urge our listeners to talk to a GP if they have specific issues they want to sort out. But this imbalance between the estrogen and the testosterone plays quite a big part, doesn't it, in our skin changes?
Good news is there's a lot you can do about it, whether that's replacing your estrogen and testosterone via HRT or making lifestyle changes to diet and exercise. And of course, it's worth reviewing your skincare regime when this happens too. So to help us find out what to do and where to start, as well as share her many years of expert knowledge and wisdom, we are joined today by Eve Cameron, who is Group Beauty Director at the publishing house Hearst Lifestyle. Eve, 59, is one of the most highly respected beauty journalists in the UK. We both know her very well, don't we, from our years in the glossy magazines. And she has been writing and broadcasting about all things beauty-related for over 30 years, beginning her career on Cosmopolitan. I think that might have been before your time, Lorraine.
She was before I was Cosmo editor. Eve was there, yes. That's how knowledgeable she is.
Well, exactly. And she was also editor-in-chief of both Zest and She magazines and is currently the group beauty director for Good Housekeeping, Red and Prima. And when she's not testing serums or researching the latest treatments, you'll find her walking her doggies in the wilds of Wiltshire, where she lives with her partner. Oh, and she just happens to be a qualified yoga teacher too, so we'll be asking her about that. Welcome to Postcards from Midlife, Eve.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, well, it's great to see you, looking so wide-eyed and bushy-tailed. Let's start by asking you, because we're always fascinated about this, what's your morning routine?
I normally get up something around, I don't know, 6:45, something like that. And then I might do a quick yoga routine. I try to meditate every morning. I don't always succeed because sometimes, you know, life is just too busy, but I will do that. And then I don't have breakfast because I follow intermittent fasting. So I don't tend to eat until lunchtime. And then beauty-wise, I always cleanse my face in the morning with a wash-off cleanser. And then I'm different to most people. Because of being a beauty editor, I have hundreds of products. So I might be testing a new product, or I might be feeling in a certain way. So after my cleanse, I will apply a serum, might be hydrating, or it might be to tackle a particular skin concern. And then I will apply a moisturizer. And from March to October, I will apply SPF on top of that. That's my morning routine. Oh, and makeup. I do put some makeup on as well. I don't put much makeup on, actually. So I use concealer because I've got more bits of redness now than I ever used to have. So absolutely concealer. And I don't tend to use foundation, but just concealer instead. And then I will do something with my eyes, something to make them look less small. Yeah, they've become smaller with age. And then just a nice lip balm, a tinted lip balm, maybe a pop of blusher, maybe a bit of bronzer if I'm looking a bit peaky, but it's pretty simple.
You have been a journalist in the beauty world for decades, a little bit like us. So how did you get started? And what have been the career highlights for you? Because it is pretty glamorous sometimes.
I always say that the glamour is about 5% and it's 95% hard graft and stress. But there
it
we
is,
go.
Yes.
Maybe that's another conversation. I started in the trade press. And I started for a small publishing company that basically published two magazines. One was food, one was for beauty. And, you know, hey, I could have been the new Nigella if I'd sort of gone to food, perhaps. But I chose beauty. I suppose it was very interesting to me because at school, what was it called? The careers department or whatever. I mean, beauty, the possibility of writing about beauty would never have been brought up. You know, it was not an option. So it was actually fascinating to start on this trade magazine, which was pretty much like an apprenticeship. You know, I learned how to do everything. I sold advertisements. I did layouts. I wrote copy. I went off on press trips, mostly in those days in the trade press, to sort of pigment producing factories. Not glamorous. But, you know, that's how I started. And it was an incredibly good grounding. I then moved on to Cosmo. I suppose then I really got sort of into a career in beauty. And then, you know, I worked in various different magazines, publications, etc. So I think my highlights have been, well, you know, going back to the glamour, actually, I've interviewed all sorts of interesting people and shot them as well, photographed them as well, from, I don't know, Judi Dench to Kylie to, oh, I don't know, Sarah Jessica Parker a few weeks ago. That's really, really exciting. SJP, you know. So I think the celeb interview is very interesting, exciting. I think what I also love about the beauty industry, and I think it's changed enormously over the years. I mean, when I started, I think on Cosmo, we had about 3 pages of beauty and that was it. The newspapers didn't cover beauty unless they were going to write something derogatory. It was always seen as a rather sort of fluffy, silly thing. You know, if you had a skin issue and went to a dermatologist, it would probably be some sort of quite elderly chap who would give you a tub of emollient cream and tell you to go away. You know, I think the beauty industry itself has changed so much. And I think actually that's probably my highlight, you know, looking back over 4 decades, crikey, I can't believe it's 4 decades actually, but to see how the industry itself has grown. And I know at the British Beauty Council, they did a bit of research a few years ago. And actually, you know, the beauty industry contributes, I think it's something like £28 billion to the UK GDP, which I think is fascinating. And actually, I think I'm quite proud to be part of that. It's also an industry in which there are a lot of female founders. And I think that's a wonderful thing. Again, when I started, there was probably some sort of big multinationals run by men. Whereas I think now, you know, there are so many amazing brands out there with female founders. And that, to me, feels like a highlight.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's so brilliant seeing women changing the narrative, and the narrative around beauty changing, and particularly around aging, which we're going to be talking about in this episode now, because Lorraine and I have just actually been discussing some of the findings from the Olay Beauty Survey of menopausal women, which I know you have seen as well, Eve. Here's a few more statistics that I think you'll be interested to hear. So 2/3, 65% of women who've hit menopause, their menopause years, admit to feeling less confident in their skin and its appearance than when they were younger. And 43% of women who've hit menopause feel less attractive. Now, does that surprise you either as, you know, a woman like us in this age group, or because your readers, they're probably, many of them are in this age demographic as well. And obviously, you know, a lot of women personally in this life stage.
I think in some ways it makes me sad, but then on the other hand, it doesn't really surprise me. You know, we live in a very looks obsessed society and social media doesn't help. As a woman, you know, you might look at the sort of the social media feeds of certain celebs, you know, who might be the same age as you and think, crikey, but I don't look like her. You know, and the truth is that she will have, in order to, you know, get that picture, she'll have taken 200 and, you know, she'll probably have hair and makeup and great lighting there. We forget that, you know, we do naturally compare ourselves to others. So I think, you know, that can be part of it. And I think it's also hard to feel gorgeous, you know, if you're having a hot flush or brain fog, or actually you've got a menopausal breakout on your chin, as I have today. And certainly I think I do hear from readers, you know, they certainly want advice and help. To turn it into a positive, however, I think one needs to also remember that actually there is so much that you can do. Speaking from my own point of view, you know, because I'm actually now postmenopausal, and I think I wobbled a lot a few years ago. Whereas now, you know, I'm kind of through it. And yes, I don't like the way that my face is falling southwards. I don't like it, but you know, I'm privileged to be aging, and that's how I see it. And I think one eventually sort of goes through this process and sort of comes out the other side and says, well, you know what? Yeah, I don't like it, but I accept it. And actually there's plenty you can do. And also there's so much more to life as well, you know, and particularly this sort of second half of life, you know, it can be so joyful.
So you're 59, you've been through your menopause, but you've got the menopausal breakout. How did your skin change during perimenopause, perhaps leading into that stage?
Perimenopause, I didn't actually realize that I was in perimenopause. Mm. I think that's, you know, which I think is a really common issue. And I know that my moods were going up and down, and I had brain fog, and I really wasn't quite sure what was going on. And I've always had issues with acne all my life. So I think my skin certainly started to flare again during the perimenopausal years. But for me, I almost seemed just like a continuation of my acne. And it didn't really occur to me that it was about perimenopause until actually a good girlfriend of mine flagged it to me. And I also started, I think later, I started to have issues with skin sensitivity as well. My skin certainly has become more sensitive. And I haven't become that much drier, but then you see, I wasn't that dry to start with. And I think for people who have very dry skin, obviously their skin will become considerably drier. For me, it's just become kind of nicely dry because I always had oily, spotty skin. So in fact, I don't mind the dryness so much, but that's what happened. Obviously, I think more people have issues with dry skin and than breakouts, to be honest. I think it's a smaller percentage. And then, of course, you know, everybody will have issues with, you know, lines, wrinkling, sagging, etc.
How did you feel during this phase? Because a lot of us can kind of like feel a bit lost, lose our sense of identity. I mean, you've talked about the impact of menopause on skin, but were there other factors? I mean, hot flushes, you've mentioned, that's the kind of classic one. But how were you feeling, and how was your relationship with how you looked? Because obviously you've worked in the industry, as we say, all these years, and you have changed. We've all changed. Your face has changed. Do you have a kind of relationship with your looks, would you say?
Definitely. I think I know that I was very reluctant to talk about perimenopause or menopause because I felt it was aging me in the workplace. And to also admit then, I think I started taking HRT when I was in my early 50s, but to admit to taking HRT to younger colleagues, I suppose, felt really quite seismic because I always used to lie about my age as well. So I always used to shave a couple of years off, you know, I think partly because of working in the industry that I do, which is quite a youthful industry. And so I think I was, I was very nervous about talking about it, which is why I think actually now that the conversation has opened, you know, you talk about it very openly. And obviously there are others who talk about menopause. And I think that's a wonderful thing, because suddenly it's not, the stigma is not really the right word, but, you know, it's not the taboo perhaps that it used to be. And now I'm quite, you know, I'm kind of out and proud really talking about HRT and ET. And if I can help anybody else, then fantastic. But I think, yeah, I think I did certainly wobble. And I think, you know, this sort of sense of loss of one's youth, of fertility, of all of those things, I think that is bigger perhaps than one might think. And it's when it hits you, you know, it really can feel like an emotional roller coaster on so many other levels, not just the hormonal, I feel a bit cranky today, not just that, but I think that, you know, there's a deeper, quite profound sense of loss sometimes. And I know that sometimes when I look in the mirror, you know, I don't know about you, but I often will pass a mirror and sort of put my fingers on my cheeks and under my jaw and sort of wake it up, or I'll catch sight of myself, particularly, you know, in a changing room, you know, that, you know, as you do, you know, when you're trying something on. And I suppose when I was younger, I'd sort of be thinking about, I don't know, perhaps my body, whereas now I might catch sight of my face and I might see the sagginess on the side and feel disappointed. You know, it is hard, but ultimately, hey, you know, it's better than the alternative, isn't it? And,
yes.
You know, and at some point you just have to say, okay, this is where I am. This is how I am. Now what next? What am I going to do next?
You took up teaching yoga as part of this stage of life, and I'm guessing that helps you feel better on the inside when all of this outside is changing. What did you notice about doing that? And what advice have you got for women? Because yoga is part of a whole lifestyle change. And there's a lot of lifestyle stuff, isn't there, that we can do that makes us feel happier inside and improves our mind, body, skin, everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think lifestyle is incredibly important. You know, it's not just about products. And certainly for me with yoga, I mean, yoga is about strength and flexibility, which are important things as you get older. Obviously, depending on how deeply you want to go into it, yoga is also, you know, it is a spiritual practice. It is also about incorporating meditation as well. And I think all of those things do certainly help. And in fact, there are many, many studies around yoga and meditation showing that they're proven to reduce stress, reduce anxiety levels. There's also greater clarity, I think, that can come with meditation, which really helps with brain fog, for example, you know, and sort of about boosting memory and everything. So I think that it's an incredibly sort of positive discipline to follow. But equally, I mean, I don't want to call yoga exercise because I don't actually see it as exercise. So many people do. But then if you do any form of exercise, that's also going to have a positive impact on the way you feel, on your mood, but also ultimately your skin. Exercise, yoga, meditation, all of those things help you to sleep better. And as we know, you know, sleep is very often a big issue during perimenopause and menopause. And sleep or lack of sleep has a profound impact on your skin. It's actually been shown to impact the skin barrier. Of course, we know a lot about diet as well now. And certainly the experts that I speak to, I would say the majority are great advocates of the Mediterranean diet, you know, sort of plenty of antioxidants with fruit and vegetables, plenty of good fats, high protein, fiber, etc. All of those things as well impact how you feel and also ultimately your skin as well. So I think having a look at the whole of one's lifestyle is really important, and also incredibly important as you age, because obviously, well, I think most of us want to have a healthier sort of a second half. You know, we want to sort of carry on doing fabulous things, hosting podcasts, writing features, teaching yoga, doing all of these things that we want to do. One of the things that I'm finding that we're talking about a lot more, rather than anti-aging, is we're talking about longevity, you know, to sort of turning into a positive. And I think obviously lifestyle really helps with that.
Now, Ole has been working with the independent body, the Skin Health Alliance, whom I'm sure you will know very well, because they promote skin health education and ensure products meet the highest scientific standards of skin safety. I mean, obviously, that's really important to you as a journalist, isn't it? And your whole career has been about sharing knowledge, giving women the tools to help them look and feel their best. But what are the key things that you want women in midlife, whether they're approaching, in the middle of, or out the other side, to know about skin and skincare? If there were, say, maybe three things that they should do.
I'd like to say that skincare works. particularly if you're using the right ingredients for your skin type and concern. I think it doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to involve, you know, 15 steps. It doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to cost a fortune. I do think it needs to be consistent, though. And I think that sometimes, you know, we live in a very fast sort of society. We want instant gratification a lot of the time. And it's like, you know, I would say, well, you know, you don't go to the gym just once and do some weights and think, yeah, I'm fit. You know, it's about being consistent. And also the other thing I would say is, if you feel that your skin isn't looking great, well, maybe change the products that you're using. And I think a lot of us will either get stuck in a rut using the same things that we've used forever, or we'll sort of plow on with something just because we've heard it's really good from somebody or other. And actually, it doesn't stop really working for us. And so I think move on. If it's not working for you, but equally, if something does work for you, then stay with it.
So we talked to our lovely Postcards from Midlife community about their skin concerns and their needs. And we said, we've got this amazing beauty editor. She's like the beauty editor to end all beauty editors, coming on the show. What shall we ask her? So Sarah, she had a really good question, actually, I think. And I think you'll really get this. She says, there's so many products out there. It's mind blowing. If I put all the things on my face to appear youthful, I wouldn't have any time to leave the bathroom. What is a simple morning and night routine at a good price point aimed at aging skin? Tell us, Eve.
It's a fantastic question. I am a great fan of less is more. So I think in the morning, cleanse. I think a cleanser should always be gentle. You don't want to use anything harsh or stripping, but the actual texture is something of your choice. You know, if you have dry skin, something balmy, creamy. I personally like a wash-off, and wash-offs are a lot less stripping than they used to be in the past. There are some that don't leave your skin taut at all. So a nice cleanse. Then I would go for a serum. And again, it depends on what your particular skin concern is. But let's assume that, you know, you want hydration and a little bit of firming, all of those things that tackle the visible signs of aging. Then a good serum, for example, the Olay Collagen Peptide Max for menopausal skin would be a very good choice. Used it myself this morning. It's marvelously hydrating. It's got some good ingredients in it, hydrating ingredients, and also peptides, which we might come back to in a moment. And then follow the serum with a moisturizer, maybe a moisturizer with an inbuilt sunscreen, or a moisturizer, again, Olay Collagen Peptide Max Day Cream, be a good choice, followed then by an SPF. Now, certainly you do need an SPF 100% if you're going to be outdoors a lot. Most derms would say year round. You know, your choice, it depends on your lifestyle. In the evening, I'd cleanse again, maybe twice, depending on if you've had a lot of sunscreen on or lots of makeup. And again, your serum and a cream. You might want to move into a targeted active if you've got something else that you want to tackle. So, for example, hyperpigmentation. So you might be looking for something with vitamin C in it. Or you might want to have sort of some all-round sort of global firming and skin smoothing. So you might be looking for a retinoid, a vitamin A derivative. So you might want to target something specifically, but that would be it. So it's basically cleanse, serum, moisturizer, sunscreen in the morning.
Very good. I like that. It's a simple but effective
one. It's simple, stupid, as they say.
Yeah. I suppose this one actually does lead on because it's about ingredients. And I know you've mentioned a few there. And this is from Bonnet, who says, I have fairly good skin and skincare routine, including a hyaluronic and retinol serum. My question is, every week there is a new serum to add. Vitamin C, squalene, I'm probably saying that wrong. Niacinamide, probably saying that wrong as well. How do I know which ones to include in my skin routine? So maybe just explain, Eve, if you will. First of all, you could tell me how to pronounce those words. And secondly, maybe just a couple more of those. You've explained vitamin C and retinol already, but yeah, go on, say it. Niacinamide?
Vitamin B3, also known as niacinamide.
Okay.
I love it. It's one of my favourites. It's a brilliant all-rounder. Niacinamide works to boost collagen. It strengthens the skin barrier. It locks in moisture. It's good for hyperpigmentation. It does a variety of things. And niacinamide is a really, really great ingredient. And it works on pretty much any skin type. and everyone could tolerate it. So it's a really, really good ingredient. And leptides are building blocks of proteins. So collagen and elastin sort of deplete in the skin with age, and particularly during menopause, collagen levels sort of crash by something like 30%. I mean, it's a real, really big crash. So anything that basically will sort of stimulate your collagen and elastin levels is a good thing. And peptides are an ingredient that does that. And again, obviously that's in the Olay collagen peptide serum and cream. I mean, they've got a long history of peptide use. You know, they've been using them for 10 years, something like that. So there's a lot of research there. And that's a great ingredient. And then also we mentioned, I think, that hyaluronic acid was in that particular serum that your listener was speaking about. And that sort of retains moisture levels in the skin, as does glycerin. Glycerin also does that. So hyaluronic acid, glycerin, they sort of keep the moisture into the skin.
So say I get all this lovely skin and I'm feeling refreshed and hydrated. And as you say, I've reviewed my lifestyle so that I'm getting the sleep and all the other things that will contribute to a healthier looking skin. What about makeup, Eve? Because a lot of us don't change our makeup from our 20s kind of onwards. We get kind of stuck with matte instead of gloss foundations and things like that. What are your recommendations around makeup? You must have seen some amazing changes in makeup over the years.
Huge. And I think one of the most exciting things in makeup, apart from the fact that there's more choice for every skin tone as well, which there never used to be, I think the textures have changed and improved so much, which is a wonderful thing because, you know, it used to be pretty much that you could only buy powder formulations. I mean, obviously there'd be liquid foundation, but generally powder formulations, and they wouldn't be particularly sort of finely milled. So you'd get, you know, you wouldn't be able to get lovely sheer textures and things like that. So I think, yes, makeup has come a long way. The things that I would think about, and everybody's different because we've got different face shapes and eye shapes, etc. But broadly, I think creamy formulas are more forgiving than powders, particularly if your skin is dry. I think everybody should pay attention to their brows. I don't know about you. I mean, I certainly plucked mine vigorously.
Gen X trauma.
I mean, you know, and these things come back to bite you on the bum, don't they? And I think that anything you can do to sort of invest in your brows is a good idea, whether that is simply with, you know, sort of brow pencils, brow tints, etc., but also having treatments like, you know, lamination treatments, things like that, and also dyeing the brows. I think that's really important. I think also a tip is to play up a feature that you love. I mentioned earlier that my eyes have become smaller. And so, and this is with age, and I've got, you know, I've got more hooding in my eyes. So therefore, I have to pay a lot more attention, I think, to making them look sort of bigger. So I do little tricks like tight lining in the lash line. So sort of putting a pencil, sort of working it into the lash line to give that lash line a bit more definition, and also taking shadow above the socket line. You know, that gives me more eye. But equally, you might think, well, I'm not going to bother about my eyes, but I've got fabulous lips and I'm really going to play them up. So I think it's about sort of making some choices as well as to what you're going to really work on. And it's quite a good idea to go for a makeover at a brand store or a counter. And I know it sounds like a slightly dated thing to do because there are so many, you know, there's so many brilliant tutorials on YouTube and whatever. So you could, you know, obviously follow one of those. But I do think that actually going to some of the makeup counters where actually so many makeup artists have started their lives on some of those counters, some of the big name makeup artists, and actually going along and having somebody else, most of those makeovers are free as well, or, you know, it might be £10 or £15 redeemable against purchase. But, you know, to have somebody else look at your face and say, you know, this is what you could try, I think is invaluable. You know, you can also look at trends. So for example, this summer, there's a big trend for a matte red lip. Now, I don't think matte on the lips is terribly flattering from kind of midlife onwards. It depends on, you know, how your lips are and if they're not too dry or lined. But, you know, taking red as a concept for a summer look, you know, maybe there's a way to do it with a tinted balm or patting it down to make it more of a lip stain, or choosing a softer sort of demi matte texture. So I think it's about maybe trying colours, but within different textures. I also think that concealer becomes your best friend. I think heavy foundation can be really unflattering, you know. And I mean, if you found one that works for you, fantastic. You can tell me what it is later, because I personally haven't. You know, I think that there are so many amazing hybrid textures, you know, it's sort of a, I suppose, like a rebranding of tinted moisturizer. You've got these hybrid skin textures that are, you know, a fairly high percentage of skincare with a bit of tint in. And those are wonderful. They're so flattering, so easy to apply. You don't even have to use a mirror to apply them. You know, you can do them as you're walking along the street, because they've just got such lovely textures and look so beautifully sheer. So I think there's a lot of textures to play with, and then also just playing up different features.
Sounds like you could have a lot of fun with that, I would say.
I'll do yours later.
Will you? As we're walking along the road.
You just close your eyes and let me have a go.
Now, talking of fun, we always finish our shows with a little nostalgia noodle where we step back in time. We've shared so many. We're not going to do one today. We're going to put you on the spot, Eve, and ask you, what was one of your biggest hair or makeup looks that maybe you look back on and think, oh my God, what was I thinking?
It's a very easy one. I always wanted to be blonde, and my mother wouldn't allow me to, you know, put any color in my hair. So when I was about 19 and living in a flat in London with a friend, she dyed my hair with a mixture of Jolyn cream bleach. I don't know if you remember that, you know,
yes,
the facial
your
hair.
Moustache, yes.
Yeah, yeah, Jolyn cream bleach and neat hydrogen peroxide.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
And so my hair came out kind of, well, bits of it were bleached white, bits of it were orange, bits of it were quite a nice kind of shade of blonde. And, of course, it completely wrecked my hair. But you know what? I loved it. And I thought it looked really cool.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. Well, you've got amazing hair, Eve. It's your crowning glory, I would say. But I love the idea of envisioning you with this bleached kind of stuff as a 19-year-old. Sounds fantastic. Well, listen, it's been so helpful. I really hope that I think the information you've shared and your personal stories will really help anybody struggling with a bit of confidence when they look in the mirror. So thank you so much for joining us today, Eve.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. It's been great to chat. Thank you.